I'm Stephanie Sacks, and I like to stir the pot. Stirring the Pot brings together the best minds in food, nutrition, and health to discuss some of the hottest topics. Each week, we offer answers to your burning questions, share a good brand, a weekly yum recipe, and have a rock-solid guest. It's our goal to inform and inspire when it comes to my lifelong passion. In the 1980s, my obsession with food and how it impacts health began. After years of schooling, I'm proud to call myself a culinary nutritionist, a professional chef with a master's degree in nutrition. Now I help people get healthy and stay healthy by giving them the lowdown on what the fork they're really eating. Stirring the Pot, where nutritious always meets delicious, is proudly presented by Naturopathica Healing Arts Center and Spa and Saunders & Associates. Stirring the Pot. Stirring the Pot. Today's show is Teaching Thousands to Heal Millions, and I'll be speaking with Dr. James Gordon, world-renowned mind-body medicine expert and founder and director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. But before we dive into that, here's Drive-Through Nutrition. In a fast-paced world of bad food choices, can you make better ones? What can you tweak in your day-to-day to make a difference in your health? Gear, I think you have a question for me this week.
I do. Somebody asked me, are wheat genetically modified?
You know, that's a great question because I think a lot of people think that wheat is genetically modified when in fact, outside of the little mishap that happened in Oregon a long time ago where they found a large field with GMO wheat, wheat is not genetically modified. However, it's been undergoing a process called mutagenesis for a really long time. But what it is exposing wheat to radiation or chemicals to mutate genes to get desirable traits and to make a more resilient wheat crop. What's really scary is that it's not that dissimilar to genetic modification, yet it's not considered genetic modification. We are devastated with a rise in food allergies, okay? Since 1997, from 1997 to 2011, food allergies and deadly food allergies increased, I believe it's 50%. And that says something about the food supply because we are what we eat. You're listening to Stirring the Pot with Stephanie Sacks on WPPB 88.3 FM, Peconic Public Broadcasting, Southampton, New York, serving the east end of Long Island and southern Connecticut. Now on to the good brand of the week. Thanks to Gear Magnuson. He brought me in a treat a couple months ago, and before I agreed to have it on as a good brand of the week, I had to do a little investigating.
And what did that reveal?
I used to be really into gum.
Yeah.
You know, Rebecca and I got into this conversation a few weeks ago about things that we used to eat. I called it sort of these confessions of two culinary divas. One of them for me was bubble gum, nonstop. Uh-huh. So when you gave me this gum, I was like, I haven't had gum in a really long time. What's in this? And so it's called Simply Gum. It's cinnamon. The ingredients are raw cane sugar, chicle, cinnamon, vegetable glycerin, sunflower lecithin, and rice flour. So it's pretty pure. And when I emailed the company, they sent me some samples. They sent me some collateral material. And it says on it, it has cinnamon sticks and a plastic jug. And it says, all gum in the U.S. contains plastic, along with another 80 synthetic ingredients that are hidden in the gum base.
What?
Yes. What would you rather chew? So, Gear, why don't you have a bite and tell everybody what you think? It's quite pleasing to the eye, and you can check them out at simplygum.com.
Well, that's very important. It's quite pleasing to the eye.
It is pleasing to the eye. They look like little sugar cubes, like smaller raw sugar cubes. That's what it kind of looks like.
Yeah. No, these are absolutely delicious, and I see you've opened another pack because I definitely didn't give you that many.
No. I actually got a stack of three, and my kids tried them, and Jack, my notorious foodie.
And they approve?
He loves it.
Well, there you go, kids.
And the flavors actually don't die out. That's what's kind of cool.
I know.
Right?
And it's all natural.
It is all natural, whatever that means. But this is actually
so
all
where
natural.
Can we buy them?
Simplygum.com is the place to go right now, and hopefully they'll have wider distribution soon. But I urge you to check them out, because if you are a gum chewer, this is definitely the better option. And now it's time for our guest. Dr. James S. Gordon, a Harvard-educated psychiatrist, is a world-renowned expert in using mind-body medicine to heal depression, anxiety, and psychological trauma. He has devoted over 40 years to the exploration and practice of mind-body medicine and is the founder and director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine, founding dean of the College of Mind-Body Medicine at Saybrook University, a clinical professor in the departments of psychiatry and family medicine at Georgetown Medical School, and served as chairman of the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine Policy. Dr. Gordon is the author of several books, including the most recent Unstuck, Your Guide to the Seven-Stage Journey Out of Depression. His work has been featured in numerous medical journals, print and television media, including Good Morning America, The Today Show, CNN, and much more. Dr. Gordon, you are one of my heroes, and I'm deeply honored to have you stir the pot with me.
And I'm happy to be here with you at your table.
Well, thank you. So for the listeners, what is mind-body medicine?
Mind-body medicine is really, it's an approach and it's an understanding. The understanding is that everything that happens to us affects us emotionally, mentally, and physically, and that all functions in our body, all mental, emotional, physical functions are completely inextricably connected. And so that we can use therapeutic approaches, which are called mind-body medicine, to enter into the continual conversation between mind and body and to bring about benefits for everyone. That is, we can use techniques like relaxation or meditation or guided imagery to use the mind to affect itself and affect the body. And we can use work with the body, befriend the body,
right,
and be having positive benefits on the mind, whether it's through exercise or yoga, dance, or nutrition, for that matter, that we're always working with that mind-body connection.
I love that. I mean, I've been such an advocate of this mind-body approach for so many years and always felt on an island, really, until I got to know your work in the Center for Mind-Body Medicine and all the people that you surround yourself with. It's really remarkable. My question is do you think that people truly have the power to heal themselves, even from grave illness, with the right guidance?
Well, you know, there are limitations, and we need, first of all, most of us, when we're in trouble, we need guidance of some kind or another. When the situation is really, catastrophic and immediate, we need expert intervention. So for example, 10 days ago, my ex-wife fractured her hip. Well, she needed the surgeon.
Right.
Without the surgeon putting that hip back together and putting a rod in there, she would never be able to walk.
Right.
But for the rest of the healing, there are so many other approaches that are helpful. Acupuncture, for example, meditation to help her deal with the pain, guided imagery to promote the healing, relaxation techniques, good nutrition to decrease the inflammation and improve the sort of the body's own healing capacity. So there's a balance. I think the bottom line is that we can do far more than almost anybody understands to help and heal ourselves, and that what we need is people and information to help us use techniques that we can mobilize to do that.
Well, that's music to my ears. Now, you have really pioneered this area of medicine, and how did you get so deeply involved in this particular journey?
Well, it was the way I got involved, it was both personal and professional. I think the personal is always, it's always the one that really sort of gets you off your chair from just sort of contemplating something to doing something.
Yeah.
I injured my back, this is 40 years ago, very badly doing yoga, which even could be used poorly. I was in a hurry. I was under stress. And the more the orthopedic surgeons were talking about surgery, because it wasn't getting better, the more anxious I got and the more I realized I had to do something else. And so I ultimately worked with an osteopath and worked with fasting, therapeutic fasting.
Oh, interesting.
And was able to get my back better when all the orthopods were saying was you're going to have surgery. So that was the personal, most important personal experiences, but there continue to be others. When I had allergies,
right,
I didn't want to keep taking antihistamines, so I changed my diet and I used homeopathic remedies and I ate bee pollen. from pollen from local flowers, which helped me to develop immunity to the allergies. So all my own physical problems have sort of moved me more deeply into this whole field of complementary, integrative, natural medicine. At the same time, for a long time, for even more than 40 years, I've been deeply dissatisfied with the way the Western health system works, by how poor our answers are for most chronic illnesses. So I was primed, not just in psychiatry, but in all of medicine. I was primed because of my observations about how our treatments didn't work really well for cancer, heart disease, diabetes, chronic pain, depression. I was ready to be looking at other alternatives. I was ready to be looking at those that didn't have terrible side effects. And then my own experience really convinced me of the power of this approach.
Well, you've really blazed this trail. And in the 90s, you founded the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. What is the center's mission?
The center's mission is, there are two ways of describing it. One is to bring self-awareness, self-care, and mutual help, group support, into the center of all healthcare, the training of all health professionals, and the education of our children. Another way, and the one I first started out with, is to create a healing community and a community of healers, that we need to come together to work with each other. We need to heal ourselves first, and then we can begin to work to heal others. And the center is a place that I hope is that kind of healing community. And we're teaching others, primarily health and mental health professionals, teachers, other community leaders, how to help and heal themselves with nutrition, exercise, mind-body approaches, and then teaching all of them how to work with others.
Well, and that's the teaching thousands to heal millions, which leads me to the programs that you offer through the center. What are some of these fabulous programs? I have the honor of being part of one of them, Food is Medicine, that's coming up in June, but I do want you to talk about all of the programs.
Well, let's talk about Food is Medicine first. Food is Medicine started as a course that I gave at Georgetown Medical School, and then Dr. Susan Lord gave with me. We did it together. And it was, doctors know less about food than most of the patients who come to see them.
It's so true.
We wanted to remedy that. First, we taught it at Georgetown. It was a huge success, by far the most popular elective in the school.
Wow.
Then we decided, let's teach other medical school faculty at other schools. Let's teach, in fact, everybody who wants to know about the basics of nutrition. So we've created a course, which is, I often say, the one all of us wish we'd had in medical school.
Right.
And we begin with the basics. We begin with sort of, where does nutrition fit into life?
Oh, gosh.
What's the history of the way we eat? What's the ecology of it? We move into the biochemistry, hopefully in a kind of graceful and accessible way. We teach people how to use food therapeutically, and then we work. And you're one of the people who does this. We provide fabulous food for people. They're just the kind of food that we then teach them how to prepare for themselves and their families, and if they want, for their patients or clients.
Well, it's really the translation of the science to the plate. And Rebecca Katz, who is at the forefront of the food at FAM, does such a remarkable job, really.
It's a treat. And it's all, to continue the sort of pun, it's all fresh each year.
It sure is.
It's a complete course. And, you know, from soup to nuts, a complete course in nutrition. It's completely integrated. And Kathy Swift and Rebecca Katz,
yep,
and a whole bunch of other people really make sure it all holds together. And we have amazing people who are coming this year. It's June 5th to 8th, the next time we do it in Redwood City, right near San Francisco. And Dean Ornish is part of our faculty, and Mark Hyman and John Robbins and John Bagnulo and Cindy Geyer, and it's an amazing crew of people, and we've worked together. We've been doing this together for, now 14 years.
Yeah, it's, as you guys say, a feast of science and wisdom, and I love that. But we'll be right back to continue the conversation with Dr. James Gordon, pioneer in integrative medicine, author, founder, and director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. I'm Stephanie Sachs, and with me is world-renowned mind-body medicine expert, Dr. James Gordon. And we were just Relishing in Food as Medicine, which is taking place in June 5th to 8th in San Francisco. And that's one of the Center for Mind Body Medicine's programs. I want to pick up where we left off. What are some of the other programs that you offer to teach thousands to heal millions?
But also, I just wanted to mention that our website is cmbm.org, charliemarybettymary.org, and people can read about all our programs there if they want to find out more, and they can register there, cmbm.org.
Absolutely.
The sort of foundational program for the center is our training in mind-body medicine, and we've been doing that now for just about 20 years, and we've trained 5,000 people around the world, and it is the basic training in a variety of approaches that can be used to help people understand and help themselves. So we teach meditation. We teach actually several different forms of meditation because different kinds of people like different kinds of meditation. We teach guided imagery. We work with biofeedback so you can learn how to control the temperature in your hands. Essentially, if you warm your hands, we have a little thermistor that measures temperature.
That's cool.
Relaxing, because as everybody knows, when you get tense, your hands tend to get cold. We use autogenic training, which are sort of remarkable, simple phrases that can balance out the nervous system that you say to yourself. And then we teach people how to work with self-expression, both in words, in a group, sharing with each other, on paper with words, using drawings, and using movement and dance. Very playful, expressive, as well as very deep kind of training. And it takes place in small groups as well as large groups. So if 200 people come to our training, which is about average here in the United States, we have 20 small groups. And in that small group, you really discover what's going on with yourself. You have the opportunity to practice the techniques, to share the results with other people. And nobody interrupts, nobody analyzes, nobody interprets. These groups are opportunities for self-discovery. And people go very, very deeply. And amazingly, they also become very close to one another in the course of this week. And there are people who have lifelong friendships as well as lifelong practices for using for themselves and others that come out of this. And the next training is also going to be in the West Coast in October 11th through 15th. And the first part of the training, you learn the science behind these techniques, and anybody can come to these trainings. You don't have to be a health or mental health professional.
What I find so interesting about this is that you're talking about groups getting together to prompt healing. And oftentimes when people are in traumatic situations or they're going through a tough time, they tend to isolate. And it's my experience that that isolation actually can promote further illness. And what's fascinating about your programs is you really encourage the group setting.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And it's not only psychological trauma, but as you're pointing out, it's also chronic illness of any kind that tends to isolate people. And isolation is deeply damaging. It's a major factor in depression, major factor in people feeling suicidal. It's not good for the immune system, and it's bad for human beings. We're meant to be connected to one another, at least just about all of us are. And when you create that group, the healing process completely can shift. We've seen this. We've done a lot of work with U.S. military who've been traumatized by serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. And one of the worst things that's going on in the military is that they're being pushed into being medicated, not meditation, medication.
Right.
And they're into individual therapy, which some of them may like, but the vast majority don't want. They want to be in a group. They want to be in a group sharing with people whom they feel they can trust and in a situation where nobody's going to judge them or put them down in any way or even turn the spotlight on them. But it's not just military. We found this all over the world where we work with war and disaster traumatized populations. And we found it here in the U.S. with people with cancer and HIV and chronic pain and depression and anxiety. We're just people who want to learn how to help themselves, that the group is such a powerful force in helping people to help themselves.
I've had the great gift of being present at several of your talks, whether it's at Integrative Healthcare Symposium in New York or watching you online or Kripalu. Honestly, sitting in a room, hearing you speak is like snuggling under a warm blanket. There's just something very healing about the experience and all of the wisdom you bring to the table for people. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I'm really glad to hear. Yeah, I mean, this is the idea. We're supposed to be welcoming people. I've just been spending time in the hospital, not myself, but visiting my ex-wife and watching what goes on there. And so much of it, and it's so counterproductive.
It's so true.
The whole point is to create a warm and welcoming atmosphere. Hospital and hospitality are absolutely related words, but we've lost that connection.
It's very true, you know, and I want to circle you back to food, because really what we're talking about is nurturing and nourishment on so many levels. And from your season perspective, how important is the food we choose in the mind-body approach?
Food is crucial. Food is crucial in itself.
Yeah.
And food, I mean, there's all the literature about how, you know, how a proper diet or, you know, a good diet, a decent diet, a diet that doesn't, that's at least conforms somewhat to our evolutionary programming can be beneficial in preventing and treating every chronic illness. So that's there. But beyond that, food should be a joy.
Absolutely.
Food is a way for us to really enjoy ourselves, a way to come together with others. It's also an opportunity for meditation, for self-awareness.
Yep, it sure is. You know, if you chew your food and you kind of really let your felt sense get into what you're eating, it can be so nourishing. Very quickly, Jim, because we have to wrap out, what is your most favorite food experience?
Well, I'm going to tell people one other thing. If they're interested in how I apply all these techniques and working with other people, they can read my most recent book, Unstuck, Your Guide to the Seven-Stage Journey Out of Depression.
Out of nutrition, right.
Because I wanted to come back to nutrition, because in Unstuck, I do talk about nutrition. The best experience for me with food is I was learning, my teacher, who began to be my teacher in 1973, was a mad Indian, brilliant acupuncturist, herbalist, homeopath, meditation master, and he would look at you and he would say, "And I'm an even better cook."
Oh, I love that.
The best experience was we came in from, I was living in the country on a farm, we'd been shoveling out snow all day, everybody was totally wiped out. Sham, this man who is 15, 20 years older than all the rest of us, clapped his hands and said, "Okay, what do you want to eat?" And then what he did, whipping it up from leftovers and canned goods and God knows what else, is he made the most amazing meal I'd ever had in my life.
That sounds glorious.
Showed me how by cutting foods differently, they would smell different, they would taste different, they would have a different psychological effect. By mixing foods in certain ways, I could feel the shift in my emotions and the shift in my attitude. It was an absolutely stunning experience and really opened me to the enormous possibilities of food to not only nurture us, but to change consciousness.
Well, thank you for that. And you can learn more about Dr. James Gordon at jamesgordonmd.com and cmbm.org. Jim, what a gift to have you join the show. Thank you for blazing such an important trail.
Thank you, Stephanie. See you soon.
See you soon. What a treat to have Dr. James Gordon on the show today. He has definitively inspired me, and I know Rebecca. And, you know, I'm just thinking, let's lose the weekly this week and get Rebecca on the phone, because I want to talk to her about something. A little background here, Confessions of Two Culinary Divas. A couple weeks ago, Rebecca sent me an email about Pop-Tarts and how Pop-Tarts contain seven essential nutrients. And so the two of us got into this back and forth texting to distract us from work that we had to do. What? Hello?
Did I just hear you like slipping my secrets about Pop-Tarts?
I'm willing to confess too. We both like Pop-Tarts as kids.
Okay, and you recall that mine were without the frosting.
Mine too. The right. frosting was too plasticky for me, but the rest of it seemed to taste okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and the joke was that they don't contain these essential nutrients in the way that we know nutrients. But what happened is you and I got onto this texting kick about confessions of things that we used to eat. And one of my main things is Haribo gummy bears.
And, you know, mine was Jelly Bellies.
So we were both sugar addicts at some point in our lives.
Yeah, Jelly Bellies.
Okay, so wait, I didn't tell you this, though. I used to take three gummy bears, different colors, typically the red and the green and the white, and I used to cut them in thirds, and then I used to push the three different colors together to remake a gummy bear. I was mixing flavors in candy.
Oh my God. Listen to what I used to do. I used to take like a blueberry Jelly Belly with a peach Jelly Belly and like, I don't know, whatever, pineapple Jelly Belly, whatever. This is when I wasn't eating cinnamon Jelly Bellies. And I used to do all these different little flavor profiles. So we were practicing culinary alchemy, right, and recipe development with candy.
Oh, my God. That's hysterical.
Oh, my God.
We were doing the same thing. You with Jelly Bellies, me with gummy bears. I also had this gumball thing, right? And I know that you had a Lucky Charms thing.
Well, I did, but, you know, Lucky Charms only worked, like, when they immediately went into the bowl. If they got soggy, they were no good. It was something about the little marshmallows and the crunch thing. So, yeah, I used to have them at my friend's house. I used to sleep over at my friend's house, and her mother would let me eat Lucky Charms, but my mother would never have any of that in the house.
Oh, I had the same exact thing. Well, the thing that's so interesting for both of us is, you know, our culinary prowess started with candy many years ago. And now you can catch us both at Food is Medicine in San Francisco in June to teach people about nourishing themselves with food. And this is a great program that you take the lead on that I'm so honored to be a part of. And we got our start in candy.
That's right. Oh my God. We were like mini Willy Wonka.
And now we're teaching people how to mix real food, not candy. There will be no bowls of Haribo gummy bears or Jelly Belly jelly beans.
Sorry, but there'll be a lot of yum.
Without the candy. So I am so excited to be a part of this with you. And if listeners out there want to know more about this great program, check out cmbm.org. Ciao, Bella.
Ciao, Bella.
Understanding the interactions between mind and body and the ways in which emotional, mental, social, and spiritual factors can directly affect health can be the beginning of real healing. If this approach is new to you, I urge you to check out Dr. Gordon's work and the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. James Gordon, Rebecca Katz, and to everybody who helps me stir the pot, including Geir Magnuson, James Blueweiss, and Nancy Atlas. To stay updated and informed and to keep this conversation going, sign up for my weekly blog at stephaniesacks.com. That's Stephanie with an F for food. Food allergies on the rise. Why is this week's title? And you can link to the weekly yum recipe there too, because there is a recipe this week. I also want to mention that I'm going to be teaching classes at Plain Tea in Southampton starting in June. Lunch and learn. Check out my website under workshops for more information or email info@plain-tea.com. For next week, Carolyn Jones and Lisa Frank will be here to talk about their new film, The American Nurse, a tribute to the remarkable women and men who are the unsung heroes of healthcare. This show would not be possible without the generous support of Naturopathica Healing Arts Center and Spa and Saunders and Associates. And thank you for tuning in to WPPB 88.3 for Stirring the Pot, where nutritious always meets delicious. Stirring the pot.